before we start here, I just wanted to, like, talk to you, because there's stuff that keeps getting into the episodes.
Yeah, I know. I don't know why.
Yeah, so when we're recording, we just have to be very careful about what we're saying.
Okay, I can try, but some of, I mean, some of the stuff we talk about is pretty silly.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
So, we just stick to the stuff in the stories and our research and our notes.
Yeah,
we should
and
be
not talk about, like, oh my god, not call each other out on the editing stuff, since we now know that wasn't either of us.
Yeah. No more of that.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, I'm gonna record.
Okay.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to BC is Creepy. I'm Topher Graham.
I'm Ariel Hansen.
And I am very excited to talk to you guys today.
Yes. Yeah. Why are you so excited, Topher? Please, pray tell.
Well, we have a really interesting subject. It's probably the most modern of ones that I've done.
Mm-hmm.
So,
Oh, a modern thing.
A modern unsolved mystery.
Ooh.
So, I have to precede everything with this, just because it's very important that we're respectful here.
Okay,
but
I will keep that in mind.
If you hear this episode and you have any information to the whereabouts of Emma Filipoff, who we'll be talking about today, please contact the Victoria Police non-emergency line at 250-995-7654 or Crime Stoppers at 1-800-222-TIPS.
Okay.
This is the first time we've had to do this kind of warning, but it's very recent. It's still ongoing.
So if you know anything that can help find it, it's Emma?
Emma Filipoff.
Yeah, if you know anything, please contact those numbers.
Please contact the authorities. And yeah, I had a bit of conflict about doing this episode, but the general strategy behind what's going on here is that more coverage is better.
Okay.
So I think it's a good idea to at least proceed with the warning, more coverage the better. So talk about it with your friends. We'll put up the pictures of Emma and people that are connected, just so, you know, if you, BC, know where she is, you can help find her, which would be really lovely.
And even if you're a listener outside of BC and you think you might know anything that could help.
Yeah,
yeah.
Absolutely.
Because we know that not everyone's BC that listens to us.
Yeah.
Anna in Germany.
Yeah. All you people in Alberta, back home. All right.
Okay.
See, I think I've given enough warning.
Yeah, yeah. This is a serious topic day.
Yeah. So, Emma Filipoff was born January 6, 1986, to Shelley and James Filipoff in Perth, Ontario. She sounds, like, really cool, actually.
Mm-hmm.
She was described as a free-spirited aura who was known for her long walks, interest in nature, skills as a photographer, artistic expression. All of her friends describe her as intensely loyal, independent, sensitive, and having a good sense of humor.
She sounds like your dream girl.
She is my dream girl. So she arrived in Victoria in the fall of 2011, which is why we're covering it. She had a brief season of employment at the Redfish Bluefish Seafood Restaurant.
Oh, I've heard. I've eaten there before, I think.
It's like a seasonal restaurant,
yeah.
Right?
Or, I think it's year-round, unless it's on Fisherman's Wharf.
In Victoria's Inner Harbour, she had a seasonal position. So
yeah,
she,
they need more people during the summer because that's when it's busy.
Mm-hmm. So she was there until October 1st, 2012, and assured coworkers that she'd be back in the spring. She was 26 at the time, and friends say that her behavior became a little bit strange.
Okay.
So stuff like on Friday, November 23rd, Emma called her mom, Shelley Filipoff, in tears around midnight saying that she wants to come home. But she wouldn't explain what was upsetting her. And a lot of reports about her say that she was very private.
Yeah.
She would talk about things in generalities, never to specifics of what was upsetting her.
I get that.
Yeah. So she urged her mother to book a flight to Victoria. And then the next day, she calls her mother back, telling her not to come out and that she'll figure things out on her own. And then later that evening, she called again, upset, come out, please help. I'm asking her to fly out and pack her belongings. And then again, the next morning, calling her mom and telling her not to come.
Oh.
So we have this, like, back and forth with her.
Yeah. So what happened next?
On Tuesday, November 27th, her mom calls the number that Emma phoned from the night before and found out that her daughter was staying at the Sandy Merriman House, which is a women's shelter, that she didn't know that Emma was staying at, and I guess she'd been staying there on and off.
Yeah.
That night, Emma called again, asking her mom to come out, and she immediately booked a flight out to come the next day. Her last words on the phone to her mother was, "I don't know how I can face you." This was the start of her disappearance.
This sounds really familiar. I guess growing up in Victoria, I probably heard of it.
It would have been really recent.
Sounding very familiar.
Yeah. Emma had last been seen by the police at the Empress Hotel, 8 p.m. on the 28th, and that was the last time anyone had seen her.
Whoa.
Yeah. But here's where the weird stuff starts to come into the story.
I feel like the weird stuff's already started.
Yeah, well.
It gets weirder. Okay.
On the day of November 28th, Emma had been captured at a 7-Eleven store on a video, purchasing a prepaid cell phone and buying a prepaid credit card for $200.
Okay.
She left the Sandy Merriman House Women's Shelter at 6 p.m. that day.
Mm-hmm.
She hailed a taxi and asked to be taken to the airport, but she exited the taxi for lack of adequate fare.
Oh.
But she had a $200 prepaid credit card, and police say she had about like $6,000 in her bank account.
Huh.
Minutes later, she'd been seen walking barefoot in front of the Empress Hotel.
Yeah.
And an acquaintance of her named Dennis Quay called 911 to say that she was in severe distress outside the hotel.
Oh.
So Victoria police arrived, spent 45 minutes talking with her, decided she was not a threat to herself or anyone else, and released her.
Mm-hmm.
Until a report surfaced in June 2018, nobody knew that had actually happened. So for a couple of years, they didn't have that clue.
A lot of years.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of a big thing.
Yeah. But by midnight that day, the police met with her mother, and she was classified as an official missing person. At this point, they actually found her van. And her van is a really strange point, because she'd been hiring towers to move the van, I guess.
Instead of buying gas and driving it?
Yeah.
Or did it, like, because, I mean, it could be that it didn't work and she couldn't afford to repair it, maybe.
Yeah. They were saying that she was prepping to, like, move back to Ontario.
Mm-hmm.
Or there was talk of she was going to go to Japan. There was all these sorts of theories. She had to move her van out of the YMCA, I guess.
Yeah.
So she moved it, like, next door.
I mean, that does remind me of all the people who live out of vans and campers that just park in different places around the city overnight, and then they move the car a little bit.
Yeah. Well, she was definitely, like, moving around, staying in people's houses, staying at the woman's shelter. They searched her van, they found her van, and found some of her most valuable possessions, including a laptop, journals, a camera, and her passport.
Okay, so she didn't leave the country.
No. They used a dive team and searched the waters of the inner harbor. There was a party of volunteers that searched the streets of Victoria looking for her. Nothing. It seems she disappeared without a trace. Coming up now on 7 years since her disappearance.
Yeah.
There are three prominent theories to what happened.
Okay.
One theory is that she's purposely hiding to live a transient lifestyle away from old connections. And she already had kind of this.
Yeah.
She was described that she seemed to attract a wide array of people. She enjoyed hanging around the inner harbor and a popular area filled with colorful houseboats known as Fisherman's Wharf.
Yep.
She liked to bounce around a lot, crouching on couches. She stayed in the shelter, obviously. There was a rumor going around that she spent a couple nights just, like, sleeping in the trees. She had no problem making friends, although she's described as a very private person.
Yeah. Yeah, and, like, it doesn't sound like she would need to disappear to be living a transient lifestyle.
No. A friend of hers, who has to remain anonymous, said that Emma had stayed on their boat a few times, just weeks before her disappearance. And at that time, she knew Emma to be very happy, although she seemed to give off the vibe that she was running from something.
Yeah. Well, those phone calls to her mom made it sound like there's definitely more to this.
There's definitely something here that we don't know.
Yeah.
And her mother, Shelley, believes that this self-induced transient theory couldn't happen because she was very close with her younger brother.
Yeah.
And she definitely would have told him something.
Yeah.
The quote says, "She would never do this to Alexander. And if Emma was going to contact anyone, it would be her younger brother." I would also argue against this because being transient
doesn't mean that you want to put your family through that much worry.
No. Would be hard without a passport.
Yeah. Like, yeah, and just, like, a laptop's a good thing to have if you're transient.
Absolutely. And I don't know why you'd want to leave your journals behind.
Yeah.
So,
I mean, I could see that being like a, I want to leave my past behind. But
yeah. Now, with her past, we do have some weirdness that came up with her mother and her other brother.
Mm-hmm.
So, while the RCMP say that this was not related, they were arrested on money laundering charges and drug and weapon trafficking charges. They were cleared, I think it's relevant to add this because Shelley describes her own relationship with Emma as guarded but loving and being the disciplinary figure in the family, which Emma didn't always appreciate.
Yeah.
A little bit of shady background somewhere, likely with the brother.
Yeah, like weird enough to be suspicious to the police.
Yeah. That she might not want to be around that.
Yeah.
Another prominent theory, and this one's got a lot of evidence, refers to Emma's deteriorating mental state. So in the journals, they found prose about her time in Victoria, and some of it would indicate depression.
Yeah.
Experts from a TV show called The Fifth Estate that covered this.
Oh, that's on CBC.
Yeah. Said that the writing didn't have hallmarks of suicide, which I don't think it would have been the suicide, or they would have found a body.
Most likely, but I mean, how long it took for them to find the babes in the woods. So, there's more wilderness in Victoria.
Very true. they did have extensive searches.
Yeah.
Very extensive. And I'll get to that a little bit more later. I guess the Sandy Merriman staff claimed that Emma required both physical and medical intervention. We know that from anecdotes that Emma was acting oddly prior to her disappearance. In a recent interview, one person she stayed with said that there was some darkness in her life. She was mentally stable, and she didn't want to get help with it. And this girl, Mika, who was talking with Vice, added that she seemed to think that Emma thought she had it under control. She was in a place where she was trying to heal something in herself, she concluded. She told Vice that Emma sent emails that were fantastical and almost childlike in their description. Emma was a very private person and never revealed really what was going on in her life, except, like, generalities.
Okay.
So, alluding to dark things, but not being specific.
Yeah.
And we had a lot of this. She also told Vice that Emma was known to binge drink from time to time, and that her diet was especially odd. Sometimes she only ate popcorn and olives. And at another point, she just ate fish.
I mean, if you're working in a fish and chip shop.
Yeah.
That could be a money-saving thing.
At one point, Emma cracks a joke that she was self-diagnosing herself as having scurvy. So she's eating strange things. And a couple people on the internet, I was reading Reddit articles.
Yeah.
Talk about this. She's feeding herself to deficiencies, which could also be a sign of early schizophrenia.
I was gonna say there's a few things that it's possible.
We also have the footage on the day of Emma's disappearance, both at the YMCA and the 7-Eleven. In both instances, it appears as Emma is afraid, anxious of someone real or perceived, somebody who never showed up in the footage, but something going on
in possibly her head.
Yeah. So that theory is pretty strong.
Yeah, well, it would make the phone calls make a lot more sense.
Yeah, I definitely feel like this was something that was really happening in her life.
Yeah.
Like, there was definitely some mental stress that wasn't getting resolved.
Whether it was in the real world or within her mind's world.
I don't know if that's what had to do with her disappearance or not, but it was definitely present. So the third theory, and this is one that's going to be obvious with any missing persons case, foul play.
Yeah.
Now, publicly, no one has ever been charged with a crime in relation to her disappearance. During the immediate aftermath, there was one potential person of interest who was questioned and polygraphed by Vic PD and the RCMP, and his name was Julian Hard.
Where is it?
Right there.
Yeah, you did as good as I'd probably do.
Yeah. Julian and Emma met in Perth prior to moving to Victoria. They had a friendship, and he started kind of crushing on her. Julian claimed on the Night of the Time podcast that his relationship with Emma became somewhat romantic while in Perth, although even by his own account, she didn't have much time for him once they were both in Victoria.
Oh.
His quote, "I don't quite know what definition most people give to a crush, but let's say that it happened in an instant. I just knew I had to get to know her. I don't get that feeling often. My feelings for her and never changed, but I was hoping I could get over that so we could be friends," he told to Vice.
Yeah.
And sometime after Emma moved to Victoria, Julian also decided to move. So he kind of followed her.
Yeah.
He outlined quite extensively his reasoning for the move in another podcast, and it appears to be one giant coincidence, although, you know, timing.
Yeah.
Like, self admitted crush.
Yeah.
Yeah. Julian also claims he briefly saw Emma the day that she disappeared.
Oh.
And so there's definitely reasons why they were targeting him.
Polygraphing and yeah. such. Even though polygraphs are not infallible.
No. He was ultimately cleared.
Yeah.
But suspicious.
Yeah.
Julian was riding the bus when he spotted Emma on Pandora Street near Alex Golden Hall.
Yep.
He got off the bus and approached Emma, asking if she needed help. And apparently she didn't really respond to Julian. Just kind of shook her head in response to his questions. And so he was frustrated, decided he was done interacting with Emma. Now we see her back in the kind of frazzled
yeah.
state. For sure. Julian was cleared by both the RCMP and Vic PD. And publicly, there seems to be no current subjects in Emma's disappearance. However, we have another instance that was really odd.
Oh.
Yeah. The Campbell River Courier Islander newspaper.
That is a mouthful.
Yeah.
Campbell River, get an easier newspaper name.
Yeah. It'd just be like Campbell River Times.
Or Campbell River Review.
Campbell River Courier.
Campbell River Islander.
Yeah.
Any of those.
So in May 2014, they reported that Gastown Vancouver business owners Joel and Lori Sellen witnessed a man in their store throwing out a $25,000 missing persons reward poster for Emma. The pair reported that the man said, "It's one of those missing persons posters, except she's not missing. She's my girlfriend, and she ran away because she hates her parents." The owner immediately called the police, and they have security video images of the man, but he's yet to be identified.
Okay.
So that is a really strange occurrence.
Yeah.
That's like 3 years after the disappearance. Vancouver, which...
I mean, that's not... You don't need a passport to get to Vancouver.
No. So in 2018, a GoFundMe of $6,000, which was surpassed, was set up to pay for a private search through yeah. remote areas in hopes of finding her. The search commenced December 1st, 3rd. This is like a couple months ago.
December 1st is like 2 months ago, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thought it was still January.
Yeah. 3 days. The immediate vicinity by the Craigflower Bridge and the reeds around the George Waterway. The next day, they moved up to low traffic wooded areas along the Galloping Goose Trail in Colwood.
Yeah.
2 and 3 were focused on the sunny side of Thetis Lake Woods.
I was going to say Thetis Lake would be where I would probably look because it's so easy to get to from downtown.
They knew that Emma liked to visit there. And specifically... areas that were, like, less traveled and dead-end roads.
Yep. Oh, they're, like, my dad and I go hiking there a lot. There's so many roads and trails and... yeah.
Yeah, it's a...
you can get lost in there very easily.
I can see that. The last area searched between where Emma exited out of her car and Colwood, where the deep-wooded grounds of Royal Roads Forest... again, both remote and secluded areas that are not well traveled. Nothing was uncovered during this search.
Mm, yeah.
Being that the search was the first and only of its kind, we can rule out these suspected areas as a possible location of Emma's body.
Yeah.
I think is what they were mostly looking for.
Yeah, that would be what they'd most likely find in that kind of a situation.
Yeah, well, it's been 7 years.
Yeah.
She doesn't have most of her stuff, and she's had no contact with friends or acquaintances here or any sort of family. There is going to be another search in the spring, so if you're interested in volunteering and you're on the island, anybody who wants to help is encouraged to send a private message to Shelley Philippoff via the Find Emma Philippoff Facebook page. And... there is a $25,000 reward on any information leading to Emma's whereabouts. A mouthful.
Oh, yeah, that was a lot of stuff.
And I guess I should bookend this with the Crime Stoppers.
Yeah, give the phone numbers again.
Yeah. So, Victoria Police non-emergency line is 250-995-7654. And Crime Stoppers is 1-800-222-TIPS. So, if any of this sounds familiar, or you see the picture that we're going to post with this, and you say, hey, I know that girl, or I know that guy who ripped down the posters, reach out. Reach out to police, Crime Stoppers.
For once, don't reach out to us, because we're just going to go to the police or Crime Stoppers, so just do it yourself.
Yeah.
Do it yourself.
Cut out the middleman. As much as we'd like to be involved, it is much more efficient for you to go to them.
Yeah.
So that was a mouthful.
Yeah. Now, it looks like you have a lot of sources.
I sure do. Like I said, the general strategy here is the more coverage, the better.
Yeah.
So there was a really extensive Vice article on Emma Filipov, and that was really, really helpful, really in-depth.
Mm-hmm.
I also got the InsideOttawaValley.com. It was a news story. Which told me mostly about the search.
Yep.
The search the last 2 months. Wikipedia. It wasn't as detailed as the Vice article, actually.
Probably not. Sometimes it's not.
Sometimes it's not. But still a good resource just for timeline's sake and helping me organize everything.
That's really what it's for, is timelines and that kind of thing.
Yeah.
And you get the nitty-gritty details everywhere else.
Unlike Reddit, which is just a clusterfuck.
Reddit is a mess.
Yeah. Crowdsourced information. You're going to get a lot of information. You're never going to know where to put it.
And it's going to get upvoted and downvoted, and they're not going to cite sources.
Yeah. Currently, there's a Facebook page set up by Shelley Filipov.
The one mentioned earlier?
Yeah, so help find Emma Filipov on Facebook. And there was a podcast that I listened to that was quite in-depth called the Nighttime Podcast for Emma Filipov.
Okay, that was a lot of stuff.
We made it through.
Yeah, so anything we should talk about before we say goodbye for the week? Well, a heads up is that we will, not next week, but the week after, we won't be, we'll be taking a week off because I'm actually going to be moving.
And then we're going to have our whole bad cookie office.
Yeah, so we will not have to record in my bedroom.
Yeah.
Colonized bedroom.
It will be a whole separate bedroom.
That will not have a bed in it. Just a
couch. Yeah.
Futon.
Nice.
So, but you're going to have to not move around because futons are squeaky.
Oh, gross.
Yeah. So, yeah, just a heads up about that. And
festivals? Upcoming festivals?
Not really.
No.
No, waiting to hear back from a bunch.
Yeah. I guess we just played Final Girls in Berlin. Yeah. If you were in Berlin and saw it and liked us, talk to us.
And then if you have any ideas for future topics for this here podcasto, please email us. No, we don't have an email for that.
Badcookiepictures@gmail.com.
Yeah, and who knows, we might talk about your topic on the show. And anything else we need to talk about? Oh yeah, follow on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram,
Vimeo, YouTube. YouTube is really cool right now, especially, I think.
You say that every time.
I know.
It's really cool right now.
It's really cool. It's going to get cooler. It really is going to get cooler. We're really focusing on content for our Bad Cookie YouTube, and especially today is actually the start of Women in Horror Month.
Yeah.
Which we've always been very big proponents of.
Yep, yep.
So, yeah, we're going to be doing a couple things for Women in Horror Month.
Yeah, we'll be having an interview coming out soon with another woman in horror, and yeah. Also, if you enjoy this podcast, please, if you haven't already, subscribe, and then also if you can, like, rate and review on whatever you're listening to it on, if you like it. If you don't like it, I still don't understand why you're still listening to it.
It's been, like, 28 minutes.
Yeah. And also, it's been, like, this is our 32nd episode.
So, if you really got that big of a grudge against us, you know, send us an email. Let's duke it out.
I don't want to get hate mail. Don't hate. Just, if we frustrate you that much, don't hate listen. Just stop listening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But if you do like us, share.
Yeah, tell everyone you know about the podcast, and the more people who are into it, the better it gets. And if you really love it, you should become a patron.
Yeah,
on Patreon, look up Bad Cookie Pictures, because we're on there, and the money goes towards getting us new equipment, and I recently had to renew a lot of our website stuff, so paid for that, and really just helping us make more things like this podcast and other content, so.
So yeah, help us out.
Yeah, Bad Cookie Pictures on Patreon.
And the best thing you can do for SBC,
stay creepy.
Yeah, that was great. I don't think, you know, we'll edit some of the stuff out, but...
Yeah, just the little bits. That was really good.
Yeah, I'm glad. Oh, that was a tough one. I did a lot of research.
Yeah, no, that seemed like a... The new stuff's always tough.
Yeah.